Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the HMEB podcast. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HME Business Magazine, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. This installment of the HMEB podcast covers some important news for the industry, round 2021 of competitive bidding, and we're also going to give you a quick preview on some important industry legislative events that are coming up. Let's dive in. Obviously, round 2021 is big news for the HME industry. CMS announced this latest round of competitive bidding back on March 7th. There's some big changes for the industry, and I'm here talking with Kara Bockenheimer of Brown & Fortunato, a well-known industry law firm, about some of the key changes with this latest round, as well as what providers should be doing now in order to get prepared. Kara, how are you? Thanks for coming.
I'm good today, and how are you? And thanks for having me.
I am fantastic, and the pleasure's all mine, Kara. So let's dive in. What is the biggest one, the biggest component of round 2021? Is it lead item pricing?
Well, yes. In a nutshell, there's actually a lot of new things compared to the previous bid rounds. But we have a short time frame, as I think people know, because CMS, as you said, they announced some details the first week of March, and probably the most significant is that the bid window is tentatively scheduled to open sometime in June. And so from a timing perspective, aside from all the other stuff, there's the bid bonds is a big thing that people really have to get under control, because that's a new thing for this round. And then there's a number of new changes to the bid program, a lot of things that the industry had been advocating for a number of years, but it's going to be a little complicated, and I think people are going to need to spend some time on it.
Complicated and a tight timetable sounds like a recipe for fun.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're all in this industry, David, because never was a challenge that we couldn't collectively rise to.
True.
The lead item pricing, it looks like it will be a simpler way to bid, and it's a little deceiving because it's easy to reach that conclusion, because what happens under this new bidding method is that bidders will only be putting a price in for one item in each product category. Mm-hmm. Previously, you had to put a price in for every single HCPCS code in the product category.
Yeah.
So mechanically and administratively, it seems simpler, and that part of it is. It's the analysis that you have to do before that to make sure that that lead item pricing is the right number, because that will drive the pricing for all the other items in that same product category. And that's the analysis that we're talking about that people really have to go through. So that's a big deal change. And there's actually a cross-industry educational website that American Association for Home Care, VGM, and some other organizations have really put a lot of time and resources into for some educational tools. And the bid calculators are what I'm talking about. It allows prospective bidders to sort of play with numbers and see what those look like between the lead item and then the relationship of the non-lead items, how that would pan out. So that just went out live. And I'm going to give that website out, David, if that's okay.
Oh, please do.
Yeah, it's DMECBP, as in Competitive Bidding Program, education.com. And this is not a government website. There is the government website, which has some tools, but we think they're a little more limited. We think ours provides bidders a lot more education and ability to really work with the numbers and understand what those mean.
Yeah, and for the audience, we're recording this interview on April 1st. There's something about April Fools in round 2021 that seems to go together.
This is no joke. Let's just clarify for the record, this is not a joke.
Yeah, but
we should have chosen another day.
But that's right. They did get released this morning. That's really exciting news because, like you were saying, these allow people to see how the reimbursement is going to cascade, I guess is a way to put it, from that lead item.
That's absolutely right. Right. And you can compare the resulting prices of non-lead items to today's prices, today's Medicare rates. And you can also you know, compare them to each other. So that's important. Because the other, you know, we talk about there being a laundry list of new items in this bid program, new features, new things. Mm-hmm. The bid ceiling is being raised to the 2015 fee schedules. And that is a big deal because previously the bid ceiling had always been the prior bid rates.
Yes.
And CMS actually changed that, acknowledging that essentially that's not a financially sustainable program. And so the bid ceiling is being raised, so bidders are not constrained to put a price in that is equivalent to today's 2019 rates.
Yeah.
You can go much, you know, much higher than that.
Yeah.
The 2015 fee schedule.
And if I recall, wasn't that, you know, obviously the industry had said that because they had this sort of declining ceiling system kind of implemented, that it was going to be unsustainable. I do believe that CMS actually drew the same conclusion as well when they finally decided to go back to the 2015 ceiling. Do I have that right?
You have that right, David. We're not going to be casting blame or anything in this podcast, but and that's really what economists had said, because eventually you're going to get to zero if
yeah.
you keep lowering the bid ceiling to the previous bid price.
Yeah.
You know, and it's economically an impossible situation. And CMS did acknowledge that, and when it was in November of 2016 in their final rule that year, they iterated that exact same verbiage. They said it will not be financially sustainable, and we're like, yes, exactly, it will not be financially sustainable. So that's another big change. I mentioned the bid bonds as being a change.
And that's a really important distinction, if we could dive into that real quick, because I know that providers are aware that they've had to have surety bonds to work and bill within the DMEPOS system. But the bid bonds are a little different. Could you maybe take a second to explain that?
Absolutely. And this is something that we worked with Congress and got passed into law several years ago. And so this is the first round of bidding that's going live where that new requirement is in effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal of a bid bond is to make sure that people who are submitting bids are have the financial wherewithal to actually perform on those bids. And so where we have seen in the past basically a company that was like a one-person company winning hundreds of bids because you could, that situation should not occur under this revised bid program with bid bonds, because before you can, I mean, by the close of the bid window, you're going to have a bid bond for every competitive bid area or CBA that you're going to be submitting bids in. So that means that, you know, if I'm a one-person, you know, company, a bond company should not be awarding me 130 bid bonds. And I should not be probably able to afford 130 bid bonds, because there will be 130 bid areas. They are combining rounds one and two, another change. So there's still 100 metro areas, but it turns into 130 bid areas, but one bid bond per bid area. And so that should screen out entities that really don't have the financial wherewithal to perform in all of those bid areas. So that's an important thing. And the mechanically, the way those work is, number one, you get your bid bond, and you have to have that by the close of the bid window, and you have to submit proof of that. And then when the government comes around to offering contracts, if your bid price is at or below the median of all the initial offerers, you have to accept that contract offer. If your bid price was higher than the median, then you don't have to accept it, because that makes sense. But when I say you have to accept it, if you're in the lower half, if you choose not to accept it, you forfeit your bid bond and the government gets to collect on that bond. So that's the financial repercussion. So it's, you know, there wasn't before in the previous program, there was flexibility. There was no ramifications, essentially. If the government offered you a contract and you decided not to sign it,
yeah,
that was fine. There were no ramifications. So there is a financial repercussion to that.
And just so I have it right, those bid bonds, they have to be issued from a company that's certified by the Treasury, correct?
That is correct. And there is a list of those. It's on the industry website. It's also on the CBIC, the Competitive Bidding Implementation Contractor, the other Good Website, which is the, people should be familiar with it. But that particular website is dmecompetitivebid.com, I do believe. I've gotten that right. dmecompetitivebid.com, yes. Mm-hmm. And you can link. Well, the one caveat on that, David, is that there are probably hundreds of bid bond companies on there. There's probably fewer than 10 that are in this business. And so on the industry website, we are providing that culled down list of entities. I know VGM has their organization, and there's just a few others that will probably be in the business of issuing bid bonds for this DME competitive bidding program.
Gotcha. And what are some other big changes? I know there's been some categories that have been added to round 2021, and one that is particularly contentious. Maybe you can dive into that real quick.
Yeah, the product category, we got good news and bad news. And let me briefly the good news before we get to the bad news. How's that? The bid number of product categories has expanded, and that's what the industry really wanted and was really working with CMS to make that happen. Because with the lead item pricing, we wanted only makes sense if you have like items together. So there are 16 product categories. However, on the bad news side of that is CMS did add non-invasive ventilators to the bid program. Mm-hmm. Back in early December, CMS posted a notice on their website saying that they were thinking about adding non-invasive and invasive ventilators, as well as certain off-the-shelf knee and back braces. They got lots and lots of comments. We believe there were about 500 or 600 comments submitted to CMS.
Wow.
Vehemently opposed to this ventilator issue. And the decision that came down is CMS did decide not to include the invasive ventilators, but they are including non-invasive ventilators. And so I know there is a lot of activity going on in Washington. The clinical and consumer communities are really not happy about that decision at all, for obvious reasons, given the fragile nature of the individuals who rely on those products and services in their homes. So, but at this point, those products are in the bid program, the non-invasive ventilators.
Yeah, I think it was Tom Ryan at AA Home Care who referred to it as a terrifying development, because we are really talking about a product that keeps people alive.
Absolutely. And it's just, I mean, it is a new, with all these other new features of the bid program, I mean, first of all, our message to CMS, and I work very closely with AA Home Care, our message was, don't put any kind of ventilators in, and the clinical community had actually been lobbying CMS to change the coverage policy for the last several years, and CMS has not done that because there's some perceived overutilization of these items, but none of us think that this is an appropriate step. A better step to get it is really to revise the coverage policy on these. So it's a work in progress. I would say the fat lady hasn't sung on that issue because we've got a lot of work going on in Washington to try and get that product category out of the bid program.
Uh-huh.
So,
can you expand on that that work that you're doing? Is it a legislative fix or regulatory?
All of the above. Legislative fix, regulatory. Yeah. So having a lot of conversations about what possible avenues are, but again, the clinical and consumer communities are really. I'm taking the lead on that, and that, you know, I mean, they were very upset, and we're sort of following their lead on that to try and get that decision. And that decision could be changed at any time between now and when the bid program goes live. So I don't believe we're not, you know, they could go forward and include them for now, and they could be taken out, as CMS has done in the past, at any point before the actual contracts start in 2021.
And that's an important point to note, that this process is malleable up until the CMS pushes the button.
That's correct.
So any other kind of key changes, or have we kind of hit the major highlights?
Those are the big highlights. And I say it looks daunting that there's 16 product categories, but most of them actually make sense. In terms of just segregating out, oxygen is its own category. Standard manual wheelchairs are their own category. Standard power wheelchairs are their own category. Hospital beds are their own category. Enteral nutrition is its own category. So that's all. It's better to have, more discrete product categories with the lead item pricing mechanism because of the impact between the lead item and the non-lead item. And as you said, how those non-lead item prices will cascade, I like that, from the lead item.
Well, so the other thing we should talk about in reference to round 2021 is, I wouldn't necessarily call it a change, but while the round is 2021, here in 2019, the timetable is pretty tight. CIBIC and CMS, released a sort of very, I don't want to say vague, but it's not detail heavy timeline on the DMECompetitiveBid.com site. And it's got, right now we're supposed to be getting educated. And actually, CIBIC is doing a pretty good job of sending out regular emails telling providers what they need to be doing. And then May is when CMS is supposed to announce the dates for registration and bidding. That's also when bidder education is supposed to start. And then June 2019, so that's not too far away, is when the bid window opens. Kara, that's tight. What should providers be doing right now? How should they be prioritizing?
Okay, well, there's two things immediately that people should be doing. One is, if they haven't got on the CIBIC website and the industry website, which is the DMECBPeducation.com, sign up on each of those. You can subscribe to email alerts. On the CIBIC website, you're right there putting out announcements. Well, there's about six fact sheets out now. And just to give people some perspective, in the previous bid rounds, there were close to 30 fact sheets. So I would expect a significant number of new documents. And those fact sheets provide details about grandfathering, common ownership, licensure. There's a whole laundry list of details that people who are seriously thinking about bidding in this program really need to be familiar with. Also sign up for the, subscribe to the email alerts on the industry one as well, the DMECBPeducation.com, because we're digesting the government's information and trying to make it, I don't want to say it's not plain English, but we're trying to be a little more straightforward and make sure that people understand things fully. So getting informed is number one. Mm-hmm. And those two websites are really the best way to do it. Play around with the bid calculators on the DMECBPeducation.com so people get familiar with that. We're going to be doing some webinars and some in-person programming also. And if you sign up with your email list, you'll get informed about when those are going to be occurring. We've got some of those scheduled for the next couple of months. And so we'll be putting out details on that and how people, we're going to try and reach as many people as possible on that. That's really the most important thing. And the bid bonds. I mean, that's in terms of a today activities, those are the three things I would focus on. Go on those websites, sign up to get updates and stay connected, and investigate bid bonds and how you can get those under control for your business. And you're going to have to understand exactly which bid areas. So you're going to have to probably do a little bit of analysis and research before you can actually apply for those. But now is the time to do that. I would not wait further on that.
There you go. All right. So everyone out in the audience, Kara's given you your marching orders. And but it's really great information. And Kara, once again, could you rattle off the industry education site again?
Sure. It's DMECBPeducation.com. And the way I think of it is DME Competitive Bidding Program Education.com.
Something we all need.
Yes. Well, all those letters, sometimes they rhyme and sound the same. So, but yeah, there's a lot. They're really chock full of information. And there's ways to, you can insert questions. We're fielding FAQs and we're putting those answers back up on the website. So if people have questions right off the bat, I know we've already gotten some and put some answers up. So don't hesitate to do that if you need more information.
Terrific. All right. Well, a tremendous resource. Kara, thank you very much for the time and the information.
You're quite welcome, David.
All right.
Really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for listening, people. Yep.
All right. Thank you. Coming hot on the heels of CMS's unveiling of Round 2021 are some important industry legislative events that every provider will want to attend. To talk about them, I interviewed Tom Ryan, the president and CEO of the American Association for Home Care, and Don Clayback, the executive director of the National Coalition for Assistive and Rehab Technology, otherwise known as NCART. Let's dive into those interviews. I'm here talking with Tom Ryan, the president and CEO of the American Association for Home Care, and he's got a few events coming up for his organization, both at MedTrade Spring and then a little later in May. And Tom, how are you?
Very good, David.
All righty. Well, let's dive in with the MedTrade events. You've got the Washington update as well as Stand Up for Home Care. Maybe you could tell us a bit about both those events.
Certainly. And the Washington update, I want to actually thank HME Business as your sponsor of that update every year.
Oh, yeah.
We will be full team on board, myself and Jay and actually Kara Bockenheimer this year. Kim's not going to be able to make the event. And Laura Willard will kind of give you the lay of the land and what's happening with our legislative agendas from both the federal side, the regulatory on the policy side, and then the state initiatives we have going on. So that's it's always a good event, well attended.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because every time I go to that, I am absolutely bowled over with what everybody is doing, from the legislative standpoint, the regulatory standpoint, and the payer relations standpoint. It is a lot to digest. So anybody who's attending MedTrade Spring or thinking of attending a MedTrade Spring, make sure to put that on your calendar, because that's a great update. I always love that event.
Terrific. Thank you. No, it's a good opportunity to get our issues out to the membership and to the non-members so they were aware of what we're working on. And then one of our premier events that we have there is the Stand Up for Home Care event. And that'll be Wednesday, April 17th at 5:30 p.m. at the Mandalay Bay Convention Center. That goes from 5:30 to 7. And as you're aware, this is a campaign and the funds used from this campaign work towards our regulatory and legislative goals. The money that's been raised throughout these campaigns have been able to have us engage in public relations initiatives, engagement of law firms to fight in our issues. And then we also use these dollars to give to some of the consumer groups, certainly ITEM Coalition and the United Spinal Association, as well as the Veterans Affairs Association and others.
Gotcha. And then coming up later in the year, in May, you've got the Washington Conference, which, of course, is your big event for the year.
Yeah, that's our big event for the year. That's going to be held May 22nd to 23rd. It's going to be at the DoubleTree Hilton in Crystal City. Quick hop on the metro to the Hill. And these events have been very, very successful over the year. As you know, we had several pieces of legislation in last Congress, H.R. 4229, which was the CMR bill to have some fixes to the CB program, H.R. 3730, with CRT power accessory bill, and then the CRT separate benefit bill. At the end of last Congress, the 4229 had 158 co-sponsors. The power accessory bill had 123 co-sponsors, and then the CRT bill had 116. And typically, when we're in town with membership, we're doing about 250 visits, usually cover 40 to 50 states. Mm-hmm. And we usually get a burst in co-sponsors when we in fact have our convention.
And for any listener,
this year we're in a new Congress and we are in the process of working on getting legislation dropped, and I'm confident that we'll have working bills both in the House and the Senate when people come into town in May.
And for listeners who might not be familiar with the Washington Legislative Conference, this is an opportunity for everyday providers, anybody in the industry, any sort of stakeholder to basically meet with their lawmakers. It is a sort of concentrated lobbying effort. Is that a good way to describe it?
Perfect. Yeah, it's a great opportunity to learn the issues, meet with the policymakers, and advocate for the industry. Again, it's really a grassroots effort. Everything is local in politics, and we can work with the committees of jurisdiction and do a good job of getting leadership to drop the bills and try to move them along. But it's really the grassroots. It's you going in, speaking to your congressional member, letting them know how this particular bill will help your business, or this particular issue, how it's distressing your business, and make it personal. Let them understand that you're a constituent of them. They work for you. This is your right to lobby your government. And we've been successful with this in the past. Obviously, we stopped competitive bidding last year, put it on hold to fix it. And we got relief in an IFR, as well as a final rule to the industry that put over $1 billion back into this industry. Those efforts could not have been had if we did not have good grassroots efforts from members.
Gotcha. And you guys really kind of facilitate this. The first day is heavy on the issues education and sort of pointers for how to lobby lawmakers if you're new to that process. And then the second day, all the meetings are sort of by state delegation, and you guys basically facilitate the meetings. You set them all up and all that, right?
Yeah, we act as the appointment concierge, and we arrange the customized meetings for the attendees to meet their senators and representatives and Capitol Hill staffers. So it's a good event.
Yeah, it's basically if you've never done any sort of lobbying, this event makes it almost a paint by the numbers sort of approach, and it's a great introduction to the process. So again, if anybody wants to find out more about that event, Tom, they can visit aahomecare.org, right?
That's correct. You just go to the website, you'll see future events, and there's a registration form for both the Stand Up for Home Care event as well as the Washington Legislative Conference. You can register online and come to town for both events. We also obviously like to see at MedTrade, the Stand Up for Home Care. That's coming up pretty soon. April 17th is the stand-up event, but like to see it at MedTrade Spring as well.
All righty. Well, I can guarantee you that HME Business will be covering all three of those, the Washington Update stand-up and the Washington Conference. So, Tom, thanks very much for taking the time to tell us a bit about those events.
Thank you, David. And again, thank you for your sponsorship on both those events. I appreciate it.
Very happy to do it.
Next up, I got to talk to Don Clayback. He's the executive director of the National Coalition for Assistive and Rehab Technology, NCART for short. And he has a leadership and legislative and advocacy conference that's coming up May 1st and 2nd in Washington, D.C. Don, why don't you tell us a little bit more about that event?
Great. Happy to do that. It's the National CRT Leadership and Advocacy Conference. It's actually a partnership between NCART and NARTS, the National Registry of Rehabilitation Technology Suppliers. The two organizations have put this on for a number of years. It's in Washington, D.C., and it basically is a two-day program. The first day brings consumers and clinicians and providers and manufacturers and other CRT stakeholders together for a day of education. And then the second day, everybody goes and visits their members of Congress so we can take the CRT message around our legislation on the federal level and also some of the other access issues, bring those to the attention of Congress and get their support directly on passing federal legislation and indirectly helping on some of these other issues.
Gotcha. And if a provider wants to get involved in that, or a CRT stakeholder wants to get involved in that event, what do they need to do?
They could visit the NCART website, which is www.ncart.us, and they'll see the box for the conference where they can get details in terms of the program and registration and other sponsorship opportunities. And I should also mention, I forgot, it's the conference itself is going to be on Wednesday, May 1st and Thursday, May 2nd of this year. That's a Wednesday and a Thursday. It's going to be held in Arlington, Virginia, obviously right next door to Washington, D.C., at the Renaissance Arlington Capitol View Hotel. It's a convenient location. It's going to be great access for people that are using wheelchairs. It's convenient to the airports and obviously convenient so we can get into Congress for the advocacy day.
All right, Don, thank you so much for telling us about the conference.
Great, David. Appreciate the opportunity, and we certainly would love to have as many stakeholders as we can join us in Washington, and we're looking for that to be a great kickstart so that we can make 2019 a great year for access to complex rehab technology.
Okay, thanks, Don.
Okay, lots of solid details on Round 2021 from Kara Bockenheimer. Make sure to check out www.dmecbpeducation.com, as well as details on important industry legislative events from Tom Ryan and Don Clayback. Kara, Tom, Don, once again, thank you all. Okay, time to wrap things up for episode 6 of the HMEB podcast. Please, if you haven't already done so, make sure to click on the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. And also, if you want to stay on top of what's happening in the industry, make sure to check out hme-business.com. Again, that's hme-business.com. And subscribe to our eSource weekly e-newsletter service. And of course, if you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the print magazine there as well. Again, that's hme-business.com. And you can follow us on social media. We're at HME Business on both Facebook and Twitter, and I'm at Postacute News on Twitter. Lastly, if you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me via Twitter. I'm at Postacute News, again, or you can contact me via email at dkopf@1105media.com. Thank you all very much for listening, and goodbye until the next HMEB podcast.